boys and girls, welcome back to Children's Storytime and Dr. Proctor's Fart Powder by Joe Nesbo. We're with three friends, Dr. Proctor, Millie and Lisa, talking to Stanslaw, or Father Christmas, about reindeer. Well, it just got to be more and more stressful, Stanslaw said, and at the same time, people were getting greedier and greedier. They weren't satisfied with simple presents anymore. They were constantly wanting bigger, more expensive things. You work so hard, Dr. Proctor said. Too hard. Tell them about the microwaves. Oh, those microwaves, Stanslaw snarled, slamming his fist on the table so hard that the boot-shaped beer stein and the candle both jumped. I wonder who even invented that infernal machine. It was my great uncle, Dr. Proctor said. He thought he'd invented a super efficient hairdryer, and he did manage to sell it to a hair salon when Dr. Proctor shuddered. That was a very unfortunate affair for my great uncle, but especially for the folks who'd just gotten their hair cut. Did their heads explode? Nilly was fully awake now. Tell us. Dr. Proctor said, I think we ought to let Stanslaw tell the story. This was 25 years ago, that year when microwave ovens really became popular. Everyone wanted one of those doggone machines. Micro, ha. Don't you believe a word of it. They weren't micro at all. Those suckers are huge. Stanslaw demonstrated with his hands. They took up all the room in the sleigh, and I had to push and tug to get those things down the chimneys. We flew, and I hauled and shoved and sweated and cursed. I lost more than 20 pounds at Christmas, and I never gained them back. He shook his head sadly and patted his stomach. When I woke up a few weeks after Christmas and couldn't bear the thought of getting out of bed, I realised I was burnt out. It had gotten to be too much for a single Santa Claus. I, who had loved being Santa for more than 200 years, was hyperventilating and having palpitations just thinking about flying off to deliver a single gift. I'd always found Christmas to be the most wonderful time of year, but now it had become something I dreaded. Stanslaw sighed heavily and stared off into space. So I quit, he said. You just quit? Lisa asked. Yep, and you know the worst part of it was? To a Santa, I mean. It didn't seem like anyone noticed I was gone. Sure, obviously folks that didn't have very much, the ones who still appreciated the little things I brought. Their Christmases got a little grimmer. But eventually people started giving each other presents, on their own, presents that were bigger and more expensive than the ones I'd flown out to them. And that's when it hit me. I was past my expiration date. No one needed me anymore. What have you been doing since then? Lisa asked. Stanslaw looked at her dully, sighed heavily again, and raised his beer stein to his mouth. The boot said, glug, 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 as he swallowed mouthfuls of beer. You've just been sitting here, Lisa said incredulously. Well, you know, Stanslaw said lackadaisically. It gets a little lonely in the Santa cave now that operations have been shut down. But what if we told you that we need you now? Dr. Proctor said. You're more needed now than ever. Stanslaw's only response was glug, glug, glug. Come on, Stanslaw, you could fly again with 6 high-performance jet reindeer, break the sound barrier somewhere over the Oslo Fjord, zip past sluggish passenger planes and slow-moving satellites, sprint across the sky like a comet. Glug, glug, glug. We need you, Stanslaw. The world needs you. And there won't be any microwave ovens, just charming little presents for kids who wouldn't otherwise be getting anything for Christmas. That's why we're here. We want you to help us save Christmas. What do you say? Stanslaw set his boot stone down on the table with a thunk. It was totally empty, just a little foam left. Is that a yes? Dr. Proctor said jubilantly. If so, let's celebrate. Nina, can I get a Christmas beer and some non-alcoholic Christmas toddies for the kids? Afraid I can't sell you anything with the word Christmas in it, Nina called back apologetically. You can have a nice summer beer and the kids could have some Halloween eggnog. Yes, Nilly exclaimed. Yes, Lisa exclaimed. Yes, Dr. Proctor exclaimed. No, Stanslaw said. No, our friends moaned in unison. It's too late. I just don't have it in me anymore. I can't help you. But, Lisa said. But, Dr. Proctor said. Nilly said. Couldn't we still have a little bit of eggnog, even if there's nothing to celebrate? Even if I wanted to. It's impossible, Stanslaw said. After they started shooting down flying animals in Australia, the reindeer elders, who call the shots, closed the airspace over the Northern Territory for all reindeer. And when an adult reindeer hasn't flown in a number of years, they lose their ability to fly. So I simply don't have a team of reindeer to fly me anywhere. That's just the adults, right? What about the younger reindeer? Dr. Proctor asked. You did say they were born with the ability to fly and navigate. That's right, Stanslaw said, and they retain that ability until they're about 10 or 15 years old. But they're too little and too weak to fly a fully grown Santa Claus and a full sleigh loaded with presents to everywhere in the entire world. It would be too slow. They'd never manage it in just one night. Stanslaw inhaled through his teeth, so it made a sucking sound. Nope, it won't work. But, Dr. Proctor said. But, Lisa said. Eggnog, said Nilly, who had rested his chin on the edge of the table and was blinking his eyes. Isn't anyone going to save this polar explorer from dying of starvation? Even if I had the strongest reindeer in the world, Stanslaw said, and gestured to Nina that he was ready for the check. I don't want to do it. I promised myself I'd never be Santa Claus again. So, I'm sorry, kids, but you're going to have to find something besides Santa Claus to believe in. Yes, yes, Dr. Proctor said, pulling out his worn wallet. Well, thanks for hearing us out anyway. Let me pay you for your beer, and here's a little extra so you can get yourself something to eat, Stanslaw. You're way too skinny. Eggnog, eggnog, Nilly chanted before his chin slid off the table. And he disappeared. No, no, Stanslaw said and pushed away the money Dr. Proctor was holding out to him. A real Santa buys his own beer, and at any rate, he doesn't take charity. Thanks for coming in to see an old man, but it's time for you to get out of here and head home now. But, Lisa began. Would you look at the time? Stanslaw said, pointing. They looked at the cuckoo clock. The next time that greedy giraffe pops out, I'm not so sure it won't manage to sink its teeth into at least one of you. I think we probably ought to be going then, Nilly said, poking his head up over the edge of the table again. Now what do we do? Lisa asked as our three friends once again stood outside the lonely tombstone pub. I just don't know, Dr. Proctor said. I do, Nilly said. Food. They started walking back the way they'd come. Should we just give up on the whole Christmas thing then? Lisa asked. I don't know that either, Lisa, Dr. Proctor said with a sigh. Maybe Juliet has an answer, Lisa suggested. Maybe Juliet has some Himmelfahrt porridge, Nilly said. Poor Stanslaw, he looks so sad, Lisa said. Poor Nilly, he's so hungry, Nilly said. Shush, Lisa said. Do you guys hear something? Don't worry, they're just totally normal wolves and anacondas, Nilly said. No, listen. And sure enough, they heard heavy running footsteps approaching from behind. They turned around. Oh, good, there you are, Stanslaw panted, bending over with his hands on his knees. I thought about it and our three friends waited while Stanslaw caught his breath. Well, you're my friend, Victor, so I can't turn you down. You can't? Dr. Proctor said, lighting up. No, I can't. I changed my mind. I say, yes, yes, Lisa cheered. Yes, Nellie cheered. To the money you offered to give me, Stanislaw said, finishing his sentence. I'm a little strapped for cash at the moment, you see. Oh, right, Lisa whispered. I see, Nellie said. Dr. Proctor sighed and took the bills out of his wallet again. Thank you, Stanislaw said, grabbing them. I wish I could afford to wish you a Merry Christmas, but that's only for members, so I'll have to make do with wishing you a Happy New Year. And with that, Santa Claus turned and walked away into the darkness. Yeah, well, Dr. Proctor said, that's the way the cookie crumbles. Yeah, well, Nellie said, crumbled all right. They both looked at Lisa. No, she said, stomping her foot hard into the snow. The cookie is not supposed to crumble this way. Huh? If he doesn't want to be Santa Claus, then we will. We are going to be Santa Claus? Dr. Proctor asked. And just how is that going to happen? We need to make a plan, Lisa said. What kind of plan? A good one. Well, that sounds like a good plan anyway, Dr. Proctor said. But first, Lisa said, dinner, they all proclaimed in unison. Chapter 7, around yawn bedtime on Tuesday. Snow was gently falling onto Onslow's roofs. Smoke was rising from some of the chimneys, and in many homes with Christmas candles lit, children and grown-ups were looking forward to Christmas, making Christmas cookies, wrapping Christmas presents, and the parents were telling Christmas stories from when they were little. But in other houses, the parents were staring blankly into space. Parents who didn't have enough money to buy 10,000 crowns worth of Christmas presents and who were now wondering when to break the news to their kids that there wouldn't be any Christmas this year. In the blue house at the end of Cannon Avenue, Lisa and Nellie were each sitting on bar stools down in Dr. Proctor's inventor's workshop in the basement. Erlenmeyer flasks were bubbling around them, tubes gurgling, cooking pots hiccuping, and the old record player that was playing a Christmas song, which was surely forbidden, kept skipping. There were many strange things on the shelves. There were balancing shoes that made it so that even the dizziest of clumsy oafs could balance with ease on the world's thinnest, slackest line. There were self-knotting ties that gave you your choice of knots. Wedding knot, funeral knot, granny knot, and of course, the ultra-difficult Windsor knot. On the top shelf, there was a mason jar of Dr. Proctor's fart powder and a Dixon jar of Dr. Proctor's super strong Fartonaut powder. On the shelf below that, there was a slip of paper that said, rather unsuccessful inventions. That shelf contained a jar of electric gooseberries, which couldn't be used for anything, of course. A bottle of heavy water obtained from the bottom of Lake Hornindale, which really quenched your thirst, but unfortunately tasted like plutonium, which is really nasty stuff. Plus, there was a bucket of Dr. Proctor's organic paint, which changed colour at least once a day and which he had invented so people wouldn't get tired of the colour of their house. Unfortunately, it also caused them to not be able to find their house again. There was an invisible boomerang. You couldn't see it, just a slip of paper that said, invisible boomerang. Shoelaces that never came untied, and chewing gum that never lost its flavour. Pretty much anything you could imagine was in Dr. Proctor's basement. No, actually, it was more like pretty much anything you couldn't imagine. And the strangest thing of all was way in the back, in the corner, locked in a glass cabinet, and that was a shampoo bottle with the last few drops of raspberry red Thyme soap. Nellie burped. Excuse me, he said. I may have had a little too much dinner. That's all right, Dr. Proctor said. Now, back to the plan. If we're going to be Santas and make sure everyone who can't afford to buy 10,000 crowns worth of presents still gets presents this year anyway, we are going to need a whole heap of presents, and we're going to need to visit a whole heap of addresses. Dr. Proctor unfolded a large map on the tabletop. Here's a copy I got of Stanslaw's old wish list and maps of all the chimneys, back doors, sheds, and cabins all over the world. Oi, Lisa said. That's, a lot. Piffle, Nilly said. We're going to need a fast vehicle to load full of gifts, Dr. Proctor said. But without adult reindeer, we're not going to be able to deliver everything on Christmas Eve. So we have to do something ultra smart. What kind of ultra smart? Lisa asked. Mega ultra smart, Dr. Proctor said. We have to use time soap. Huh? Nilly said. Listen, we start by delivering presents from midnight until dawn. And when it gets light out, we prepare a bath with the time soap, submerge ourselves, and wish ourselves back to the last place we visited, just 8 hours earlier. And when we surface again through the bubbles, voila! We're back at the start of the night and can pick up where we left off, delivering more Christmas presents. We just do that over and over again until all the presents have been delivered. That's ingenious, Nilly exclaimed. We'll get to live the same night over and over again. Yes, Dr. Proctor said, but as you can see, the problem is that we have only a very small amount of time soap left. Double piffle, Nilly said. But even if we had enough soap, how are we going to find our way to all those addresses in the dark in the middle of the night? Lisa asked. And Nilly, you are not allowed to say triple piffle now. Trip, Nilly began, before abruptly shutting his mouth with a pop. Finding them won't be a problem, Dr. Proctor said. Right before Stanslaw quit being Santa, there were so many addresses for him to keep track of that I invented this for him. He held up a small square doohickey. I called this gift positioning for Stanslaw, which we abbreviated GBS, and everyone knows what GBS is, Lisa said. They do, Dr. Proctor said in surprise. Well, no one knew it back then. Stanslaw also had the advantage that he, due to his family history of Santa Clausery, was born with a built-in nice child detector, which made it easy for him to locate the children who really deserved a Christmas present. We don't have that, so if we're going to be Santas, we'll just have to give presents to all the kids, naughty and nice. Maybe it'll help make the naughty ones a little nicer, Lisa said. But where are we going to get that many presents? Well, Dr. Proctor said, I know Stanslaw had a warehouse of presents that never got delivered, but I don't know if there's enough. However, let's see if we can solve the other problems first. Like, what kind of vehicle we can use to deliver the presents? Nilly suggested. Exactly, Dr. Proctor said. That's going to be a tricky problem. We don't have any kind of vehicle, Lisa asked. That's not actually the problem, Dr. Proctor said. Then what is the problem? Come with me, Dr. Proctor said. They walked outside and waded through the snow beneath a starry sky to the garage. Once inside, Dr. Proctor switched on the light. The first thing they saw was a motorcycle with the theatre's balcony box as a sidecar. Behind it was Dr. Proctor's big hairdresser helmet that washed your hair and massaged your scalp before cutting a perfect helmet head cut and finally plucking your eyebrows, ear hair and nose hair. Beyond that, there was something covered with a dusty green tarp. Give me a hand, Dr. Proctor said. They grabbed the tarp and tugged it off. Whoa, Lisa said, and then coughed from the dust. Super war, Nilly said. It's a tiny car with no roof. It's called a convertible, Lisa said. What a cute car. It's nuclear powered, Dr. Proctor said. Top speed, 1,300 miles per hour. Yippee, Nilly squealed, jumped into the car and started turning the steering wheel and grasping the gear shift. So, what's the problem? Registration, Dr. Proctor said gloomily. Huh? Dr. Proctor sighed. All vehicles need to be registered with the Department of Motor Vehicle Licensing, which then grants you a license plate and registration tab. But they said they couldn't approve a nuclear-powered car without airbags, seat belts, and a cigarette lighter. They said that if I drove it, they would put me, my wife, all my relatives, and all my closest friends in jail. Really? Nilly moaned. This is all according to the Traffic Act, Dr. Proctor nodded, which is how the car wound up hidden in here, forgotten under a tarp. Lisa said, so the problem is that it's a car and therefore it has to be registered. Yes, Dr. Proctor sighed. What if it weren't a car? What? What if it were a sleigh? Sleighs don't need to be registered and have license plates, do they? No. So if the sleigh were pulled by a horse or another animal, it would be legal to use it? Dr. Proctor thought this over. Yes, I think you might be right. Can't we just borrow Henmo's beagle and tie it to the front? Then if the police see us, they'll think this is just a slightly unconventional-looking dog sled. And if they don't see us, we can use the atomic engine to drive 1,300 miles per hour. Lisa, Dr. Proctor, gasped, looking around nervously. That would be breaking the law. Lisa shrugged. We're breaking the law by eating Christmas porridge, too. And since the whole reason for doing this is to save Christmas, I think it would be okay if we fudged a little. Rebellious Lisa, Nilly said, grinning from ear to ear. I like it. Me too, Dr. Proctor said, aside from the fact that Henmo's beagle would get run over and mushed by the car when the nuclear engine kicks in. Piffle, Nilly said. Rats. Dr. Proctor said. He took out a handkerchief and used it to clean his swim goggles while he thought. I could try to renovate the whole car so that it looks like an animal the passengers are sitting on. After all, if the police think the car is a horse, we won't need a license plate. Or a camel, Lisa cried. Or a rodeo bull, Nilly cried. The problem is getting it to look enough like something that will fool the police, Dr. Proctor said. Nilly said, pulling out his handkerchief and polishing his upturned nose while thinking. You start by making a four-legged animal, Dr. Proctor, and leave the looking enough like something part to me. Uh-oh, Lisa said. Nilly, what are you up to? Wait and see, Nilly said secretively. Wait and see. Chapter 8. The next morning, only 2 days until Christmas Eve. When Dr. Proctor woke up in bed, he could tell even with his eyes closed that it was lights out. This meant, first of all, that someone had opened the curtains, and second of all, that it was late enough that it was already full daylight outside. This wasn't so strange, because Dr. Proctor had been up all night, converting the car into something that looked like an animal. He didn't know exactly what kind of animal, just that it had a body, a tail, and four long legs that moved back and forth when you turned on the engine, so you wouldn't realise it ran on four wheels. But if the nuclear-powered car was going to look enough like an animal to fool the traffic cops, it definitely still needed something. The daylight wasn't what had woken Dr. Proctor. Someone had snapped their fingers in front of his nose, and Dr. Proctor could feel that someone lying in bed next to him. So without opening his eyes, he rolled over as usual to face Juliet's side of the bed to give her a kiss on the cheek and say good morning. He kissed something, but it turned out not to be Juliet after all. It was way too hard and hairy to be her. Dr. Proctor opened his eyes and screamed loudly, because there on the pillow next to him lay an animal head. To be precise, a giraffe head. To be more precise, a vampire giraffe head. To be completely precise, a taxidermied vampire giraffe head that was sticking out of a cuckoo clock. "Good morning," said a teeny tiny red-headed boy, jumping up onto the bed. "Juliet said we could wake you up now." "Nilly, what is that head doing here?" "If you ask me," Nilly said, cocking his head to the side, "I think it looks like it's searching for a body in need of a head." "What are you doing here? Shouldn't you be at school right now?" Nilly sighed. "Our Christmas party was cancelled because the school can't afford to use the word Christmas. So now we're not even on Christmas vacation. Just vacation." "I see," Dr. Proctor said with a yawn. Then he smelled the aroma of breakfast and heard Juliet singing in the kitchen. "I checked on the car in your garage," Nilly said. "With a little paint and this head on the front, it'll look exactly like a giraffe." "Well, almost exactly. And I've checked Norway's laws, and there's nothing about it being illegal to ride giraffes on Norwegian roads." "Gosh, this nuclear-powered car sounds amazing, doesn't it? I wonder if they can get it past the police. I'm not sure. What do you think? Let's find out next time. Till then, happy reading. Goodbye."
This program was produced at and first aired on Coast Access Radio, supported by Erirangi Te Motu, New Zealand On Air. Stay up to date with the latest episodes, available on accessmedia.nz.